Good morning, I'm John Michaels, Public Affairs Radio Director, is going to be talking this morning with Brendan Johnson and the U.S. Attorney. Now, what is the exact title? You're the prosecutor, you're the U.S. Attorney for South Dakota. How do you put it on your business card?
Well, I'm the United States Attorney in South Dakota and the Chief Federal Law Enforcement Officer here in South Dakota.
Now, you went to USD.
I did.
And then what, Virginia?
And then I went out east, University of Virginia, and actually moved back to South Dakota after that. Started off out in Rapid City, worked in Rapid City for a time before moving to Sioux Falls with my wife. I was a state court prosecutor for a time, and then in a private practice before becoming the U.S. attorney in 2009.
Well, of course, the thing that people right away are thinking is your father is Senator Johnson, and of course there's a lot of Johnsons, but you're the second son of him, and you got quite a family.
Well, yeah, the nice thing about growing up with the last name Johnson in South Dakota, you know, it's different from Thune or Dashiell. You know, nobody, it was easy for me to camouflage and not really stand out. The last name Johnson has been somewhat of a help in terms of not being as obvious politically.
Well, becoming the U.S. attorney, some people thought you were kind of following Strom Thurmond Jr., but that's not the case.
Well, you know, right now my only focus when it comes to politics is purely on the job that I have. And, you know, we've got some significant issues here in South Dakota, some things that we've been working on that are very important to me. And so my focus is not on my dad and the job that he's doing. My focus is on being the U.S. attorney.
Well, what I'm saying is it wasn't your dad that got you the job.
Right.
You earned it.
Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate that. You know, and I've had the good fortune of working with some great people. I started off, as I said, as a state prosecutor and working with Dave Nelson here in Minnehaha County, who was about the best boss a guy could have. And then being in private practice for a number of years with some great attorneys. So.
Well, you worked with a lot of Republicans.
That's right.
Governor Bill Janklow.
Right. His son, Russ Janklow, was one of my law partners, and Scott Abdallah, whose father is Gene Abdallah. And those are, to this day, two of my very best friends in the world.
Well, when I did the program with Sheriff Mike Milstead, he told me to call you and say that you had to come and get on this program. But you work with Mike quite close.
I do, and I think the world of Sheriff Milstead, as well as Police Chief Barthel. I mean, we've got some great law enforcement.
Well, you're on a terrorism committee.
That's right.
And the rumor is that the Sioux Falls Federal Courthouse was on the list of possible courthouses that could have been the Oklahoma City bombing.
Well, you know, here in the Midwest, we do have to be careful about terrorism, you know, and really two specific types. One, of course, is the international terrorism. And with international terrorism, what concerns me is really the agro-terrorism and someone attacking our feedlots, introducing a virus, that sort of thing. But also, when we're talking about federal courthouses, there's also the possibility of domestic terrorism. And we do have homegrown terrorism here in the United States where that poses a threat to places like the federal courthouse.
Well, the rumor is Timothy McVeigh looked at the federal courthouse and he figured that was too strong a building to passed on. But we have Dillinger in our history,
right?
Sioux Falls, so you never know. But Native American is also, I think, a part that a lot of people, you know, if they took the southern route to the Black Hills, going through like the Rosebud Reservation, it's very beautiful country. But most of the time we hear about the poverty and the problems there. But I think this is one of the things that you're working on, being able to solve some of those problems as a federal attorney.
Well, I appreciate you pointing that out, you know, because we do have some great folks working in these tribal communities, trying to improve their communities, trying to improve the lives of the children living in those communities. And what I'm trying to do as U.S. attorney is we're trying to strengthen the tribal court systems. And the idea is not only will we be able to keep people living on the reservations safe, but we also want to strengthen the court system so that we can have more economic development coming into the reservations. And the idea is if people feel safe and comfortable making an economic investment on the reservation, then we'll have more growth.
Well, you're a member of the Midwest High Intensity Drug Trafficking Area,
right?
And is that kind of a coalition of many?
It is, and I work with Sheriff Milstead on that group. You know, and here in the Midwest, what we're seeing, you know, methamphetamine is still a problem that we have. Cocaine is still a problem. Obviously, marijuana we probably see more than anything else. But a big focus of mine over the last year, year and a half, has been on these synthetic drugs. And these are drugs that are designed to mimic illegal drugs, be it marijuana or methamphetamine, what have you, but they're actually more dangerous in many cases than the drugs that they're trying to imitate, and they have a significant impact on our youth in particular. So we've really focused on trying to crack down on synthetics.
Well, we're speaking to U.S. Attorney Brendan Johnson and Native American aspects of the more gangs, I guess, is one thing. We've been able to keep gangs out of Sioux Falls fairly well because of the task force that said we don't have to be like Omaha or Sioux City.
Right.
And I remember doing a program with the police quite a few years ago and saying, well, at least we're not like Omaha or Worthington. Right. And the mayor of Worthington called me up and says, we don't have any gangs. We don't have any gangs. Right. You know, they don't, as a mayor, they don't want to admit it.
Right,
but if you Googled it, the Minnesota legislature had to provide funds for a tri-state tribunal to work on that. But coming up through the Indian reservations, I've been doing a lot of programs with the Be Free group and some of the other legislators that have been working on prostitution and human trafficking. And we have a problem of Diablos, Hells Angels coming up through the Indian reservations because of the lack of law enforcement there, or stretched, you know, might say, aspect of it, taking advantage of many Native Americans. But trafficking the drugs, and South Dakota tourism has a different meaning at Sturgis than most people think.
Well, that's right. You know, whenever you have a collection, a large group of predominantly men coming into a community, you're going to have some law enforcement challenges. And you know, Sturgis is a great place to go. I go to Sturgis every year. I love it. But there are always law enforcement challenges.
Well, the thing is that that's not far from Sioux Falls.
That's right.
Omaha isn't either. And you know, the drugs, well, the only thing I can say is human trafficking is going to out-monetize drugs. That's going to be more profitable for crime than drugs. But human trafficking is something that also they don't want to talk about, but we see happening in Sioux Falls.
We do. You know, and when most people, John, when they think of human trafficking, what they think of is sweatshops in Cambodia, or they think of brothels in Bangkok. They think of a problem that's oceans away. But the fact of the matter is we have homegrown human trafficking right here in Sioux Falls.
The Be Free group has talked about women being picked up at a bar because maybe they just went through a breakup, and people can sense the vulnerability, and they train them to be a prostitute in Sioux Falls. I can remember my mother talking, you know, when I was a kid, and that's a long time ago, about women coming into Sioux Falls during the farm show. In Minneapolis, the largest prosecution rings are from Sudan because they take the money and send it back to the criminal element back there. But in Sioux Falls, again, I think we've been able to keep somewhat of a lid on it so that we're not like Minneapolis or Omaha.
Right. We don't have a lot of the international human trafficking that you see in the larger cities, like you just indicated, like Minneapolis and that sort of thing. But we do have this homegrown human trafficking where what we see is folks, oftentimes, frankly, they're coming into our community from larger cities. And what they do is they will go into the high schools oftentimes, and they will recruit young girls out of the high schools to work in the sex trade. And they'll make all sorts of promises to these girls, John. They'll promise them, look, I'm going to pay for your phone, car. And in some ways, sadly, they're the father figure that sometimes that these girls don't have. And so these girls get lured into these rings. And then, of course, once they're in the ring, they can't leave because they are brutalized, they're physically assaulted, they're threatened, they're coerced to prevent them ever from leaving. And, you know, I think part of the reason why this is becoming more prevalent in our community is because of the internet. And so what these pimps do is they take pictures of these girls, or they use stock footage of other girls, but they put these pictures on the internet, and then folks call on the internet and they hook up with a John who hooks them up with a girl.
We're not that far away from even the Russian mafia, who promised these girls in Bulgaria that they can come over and get a job as a secretary in the U.S. But when they get over here, they threaten them to say, we're going to, you know, murder your family if you don't do what we tell you.
Right, right. It's a similar strategy. Mm-hmm. You know, you make great promises, but then the reality is much different.
Well, getting back to Sioux Falls, what are the things that the federal prosecutor does that the county and the state can't?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. You know, one thing that I like about the federal system is when it comes to human trafficking specifically, we've got a heck of a strong hammer. And I'll give you an example. We prosecuted an individual about 2.5 years ago for human trafficking. And he was looking at a mandatory minimum sentence, which is a sentence that Congress has put in place and said, look, if you're guilty of this type of human trafficking, you can't receive less than, in his case, 20 years. We were able to utilize our federal resources. We prosecuted, convicted this individual, and he's spending the rest of his life in a federal prison. So we've got strong tools when it comes to investigating and then prosecuting these folks to make sure if they engage in this behavior that they're going to be out of our community for a long time. And with that, John, and I think this is an important point, not only are we going after the pimps, clearly we are, but the message also needs to be out there. We're going after the Johns too. So these folks that think that they're going to come to Sioux Falls and meet up with an 11-year-old or a 14-year-old girl, they need to realize that they're looking at a 10 to 15-year mandatory minimum sentence in federal prison. And, you know, the difference between the federal side and the state side is we don't have parole. So when I'm talking 10 or 15 years, a person's going to do 10 or 15 years.
Now, where do they go to federal prison from here?
Well, I'm glad you asked that because oftentimes it's not in South Dakota. And these folks need to realize that, you know, we could be sending them to South Carolina, to, you know, Southern Texas. Frankly, that's a decision that's left completely up to the Bureau of Prisons. But typically, you get convicted in South Dakota, you're not staying in South Dakota.
Do we get prisoners from other parts of the country come to our prisons in South Dakota?
We do. You know, we have our federal prison in Yankton, and the Yankton prison tends to be folks that are pretty low risk. But yes, most of the prisoners that we'll have in South Dakota are not from South Dakota.
Do you handle the, say, Medicaid fraud and those kind of cases?
We do. You know, we do the Medicaid, Medicare fraud, and then we also prosecute individuals who create these elaborate tax shelters to try to hide high incomes.
Well, you have the advantage of being married to a doctor.
I do. And, you know, most of the doctors that we have here in South Dakota are incredibly honest. But we see sometimes providers as well as patients that will try to take advantage of the system, and that's where we come in.
Well, tell us about your four children.
Well, thanks for asking. Yeah, my two oldest kids, we adopted from Ethiopia about 5.5 years ago. And so my daughter is a freshman over at Lincoln High School. She has a job serving pizza during her off hours and runs track. And then my son is a seventh grader. And my two little boys, our biological kids, are in first grade and third grade.
You don't argue with an Ethiopian about Old Testament because they live there.
Right.
But where did you grow up mainly?
You know, I grew up in Vermilion, lived mm-hmm. in Vermilion until my dad got elected to Congress. And then once he got elected to Congress, our entire family, we moved out to Washington, D.C. My mom felt it was really important for us to be able to have dinner together as a family every night. And then came back to Vermilion after I graduated from high school.
So you're an alumni, I think, of University of South Dakota.
That's right.
You serve on some of their boards?
You know, I used to. As U.S. attorney, I'm not allowed to serve on any boards, but used to.
Now, you were unanimously nominated for the 40th United States Attorney. That's something that doesn't happen in Congress much anymore.
Well, yeah, unfortunately, you don't see much unanimous agreement on anything.
But you were nominated by President Barack Obama. What was that like? Because it was at a time when we were seeing so many things happen that were new.
Right, right. Well, you know, it's a great honor anytime you're going through the U.S. attorney process and to be selected for that. You know, and initially, the biggest change is just learning the difference between the rules as a state court prosecutor, which I was very familiar with, to going on to the federal side where, you know, the cases move a little bit slower. There's a little bit more time that goes into them, but the transition went smoothly.
Did you get any correspondence or anything with President Obama's name on it?
You know, he signed my paperwork. But, you know, the fact of the matter is there are so many employees coming in and out. You know, if he and I were in an elevator, he wouldn't recognize me.
Well, no, you're not old enough to remember. We just celebrated the 40th anniversary of Wounded Knee, where an FBI agent was wounded. I remember. I'm old enough to go back to where, you know, I remember the courthouse in Sioux Falls being stormed by Russell Means. It was a scary time back then. But are we living up to our promises to the Native American with our treaties and that?
Well, you know, we've got a long ways to go. What I found is what we need to do is have a cooperative, respectful relationship with the tribes. And you know, what I do personally is I spend a lot of time on the reservations because I don't believe that we can build those relationships if I'm sitting in a federal courthouse and I'm calling them while they're in Pine Ridge. So what I believe in doing, you know, I've worked the night shift with the tribal police officers. You know, I've participated in the sweat lodge ceremonies. You know, I've tried to become a part of the community, and that's the only way that we're going to move our native, non-native relationship forward is by really getting to know each other on a personal level.
Well, your middle name, you changed it.
you know, my middle name, I was born Vandal, which is my grandpa's middle name, but he always went by Van.
Mm-hmm.
And so my middle name, I've always gone by Van as well, just because that's the same decision he made.
Well, going back to the aspect of being a federal attorney.
Right.
You work with a state's attorney, you work with the county prosecution, you work with the local sheriff. Things that have been going on in the legislature, are there some things that you've been looking at?
You know, I try to stay out of the politics, particularly the legislature. You know, I've always been a believer as a prosecutor, particularly as a federal prosecutor, nobody has voted for me. And so I don't think it's appropriate for me to be passing judgment on the laws that are written by legislators. That's a completely different process. And, you know, what my feeling as a prosecutor is look, legislature passed laws, I'm going to enforce it. And, you know, folks that want to, you know, put their own spin on the law, I think they should run for political office. More power to them. But as a prosecutor, you enforce it.
Are you watching what is going on with the concealed weapon legislation? Because you're on the National Tourism Committees. That affects, you know, when people leave South Dakota, they have to be very careful about what they're doing.
Well, you do. And that's part of the problem is that, you know, the laws that we become familiar with and comfortable here in South Dakota don't apply the same way when we travel to New York City. And so, you know, I know that many people in South Dakota, that can be frustrating for us when we travel.
Well, and you can relate to teachers.
Sure.
You worked as a teacher in Boston.
Well, I did. You're going way back. I got to salute you here for your research. But yes, for a period of time, I was a substitute teacher. You know, the fact of the matter is that's a heck of a lot harder job than most people realize. I don't know that I was very good at it. But learned a lot.
And you were an intern in Al Gore's office.
I did. I spent a summer before law school working out in Washington, D.C.
Well, we're hearing a lot about the Constitution, and you're a member of the American Constitution Society.
Right. And, you know, I'm a big believer in the Bill of Rights, that's something, you know, as U.S. attorney, that's very important to me.
Well, substance abuse, like you say, the new drugs that seem to change just enough to be
right
on the line. Are the legislation that we're passing in South Dakota to where I think the state attorney is saying anything that looks like it, they're going to go after, is that going to be able to have teeth to it?
Well, I think it will. And let me tell you on the federal side how we've been handling it. You know, what we did, John, was we actually took a statute that was passed back in 1986 called a federal analog statute. And what that statute said is when a drug has a similar effect on a user and its chemical composition is substantially similar to an illegal drug, it's therefore illegal. So, you know, a year and a half ago, I had folks tell me, hey, look, I can sell these synthetic drugs in South Dakota because they're not scheduled substances. They're not explicitly banned by federal law. And so what we've done is we've taken the statute and said, look, if you try to sell this poison in South Dakota, what we're going to do is we're going to prosecute you under this federal analog statute.
Well, your father's on the banking committees. Are we seeing anything federally? People are saying, you know, with all of the things that happened in 2009, are we going to prosecute any of these people who took the money out of the big bubbles that everybody suffered?
Right, right. And, you know, I know that's been a great point of frustration. Here in South Dakota, it's not something that we've seen, you know, we don't have the jurisdiction to prosecute the big banks, the U.S. Attorney here in South Dakota. But I know that, you know, my colleagues in the Southern District of New York, and other places, they've had some successful prosecutions, you know, but some of these laws, frankly, need a little bit sharper teeth, and it can be very difficult. I mean, keep in mind, one of the frustrations I think we have as prosecutors, is sometimes it is very difficult to pin the bad actions of a corporation, on, the CEO and actually, you know, bring criminal individual personal liability against that CEO. That can be a tough thing to do.
Well, you've had quite a few jury trials now.
Right.
How many do you think you've probably had?
Well, you know, on the state side, just as a state prosecutor, I probably had close to over 30, in just a couple of years. So, both in private practice and as a prosecutor, quite a few jury trials.
Was it in private practice, or I know that you prosecuted a person who shot a police officer
right.
at one time.
Right.
Was that when you were a state?
Yeah, as a state prosecutor, and that's one, you know, our former state's attorney, Dave Nelson, and mm-hmm. I was a young prosecutor, and Dave was a boss, and he and I prosecuted an individual who actually attempted to shoot two of our Sioux Falls Police Department officers. And that case had a big impact on me. I think it gave me a special appreciation for the work that our police officers do and how they put their life on the line every day.
And there's some names that I think that you worked with, Abdallah.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. Scott Abdallah, you know, one of my very best friends. And, of course, Gene Abdallah, who so many of us are familiar with, has had such a great history in law enforcement here in South Dakota.
In Heideprim.
Right. Scott Heideprim. Mm-hmm. I tell you, this was a very eclectic law firm that we had. But Scott was a great mentor.
Well, you've got quite a colorful history. What is it that you want to do now as how long is your term as a federal prosecutor?
Well, you know, that's a really good question because we serve at the pleasure of the president. Mm-hmm. So once we're nominated by the president, we serve at his pleasure. And so he could call me up tomorrow and say, hey, thanks for your service. It's time to move on. But that's really up to him. You know, I'm really proud over the last 3.5 years, John, of the work that we've done. And I'm particularly proud when it comes to human trafficking and the progress that we've been able to make to shut down these commercial sex trafficking rings. And I'm proud of the work that we've done on synthetic drugs, because a lot of states have left that issue alone. And we've been very aggressive here in South Dakota in trying to shut down any place that sells synthetic drugs.
Well, what is it, you know, Obama's going to be in for another 4 years. So at the end of the 4 years, what is it that you want to say that you can be remembered for at that time?
You know, I hope people look back and say, look, we had some unique challenges during this time. We started to really see the human trafficking of children, and we shut it down. We saw the synthetic drugs that were oftentimes, again, geared towards our youth, and we were able to shut down that industry. And also getting back to the tribal communities as well. I hope that we'll look back, and I think we're seeing this in our tribal communities, where they feel like, hey, look, this was a period of true partnership where we were able to make progress because we worked together and we focused on results.
So we're not going to see any drones in South Dakota.
You know, not that I'm aware of.
Mike Milstead said no.
No, that's right.
But, you know, the elephant in the room, or I should say the donkey in the room, is your dad possibly retiring.
Right.
He's been in office for how long now?
Boy, 26 years, so it'll be 28 years at the end of his term.
That's a long time.
It has been a long time.
That's most of your lifetime.
That's right. You know, and in fact, if you count his legislative days, when he was out in Pierre, my entire life he's been in office.
Now, you've been staying away from politics as a federal attorney, but if somebody wanted to say if he retires, would you run for office because of your record? You've got a great record as a,
well, I appreciate that.
As in office.
Right. You know, and what I would say respectfully is, look, as long as I am working for the United States Justice Department, I need to stay away from the political realm. And it's not because of me personally, John. It's because, you know, I've got attorneys all across the state who stand up in front of a jury every single day. And what I don't want is for them to have juries questioning the motives behind bringing a case. And so as long as I'm a U.S. attorney, I try to stay away from the politics.
Well, you know, I had to ask that.
Absolutely.
But now, the U.S. attorney's office in South Dakota, you got the building next to the old post office.
That's right.
How much staff do you have? You know, how do you network through the state?
Right. Well, we've got approximately 30 different attorneys in our office, but they're spread because we have an office in Rapid City and Pierre as well as Sioux Falls. And of those 30 attorneys, approximately 25 of them are doing criminal work. But then we also have a civil division, and you mentioned earlier about the Medicare fraud and folks that are trying to cheat the government, cheat taxpayers. Our civil division will also work in that area.
Is that connected with the IRS?
Oftentimes it is. Mm-hmm. And what we see with the IRS is sometimes it's criminal prosecutions, and sometimes it is we'll go after folks civilly to try to collect money that's been defrauded.
Do we have people sent to South Dakota as part of the witness protection program?
Well, that is not something that even I know about. To be completely frank with you, even the U.S. attorney, they don't tell us if that were to happen.
Well, the U.S. attorney in Sioux Falls, in South Dakota, if you could wave a magic wand, what would be the thing that you would really like to do?
Well, I think you're giving me an opportunity to do it here, and that is to let people know about some of the public safety concerns that we have. And specifically, you and I have been talking about human trafficking. I think that's one of those areas that it's absolutely critical to let people know that this happens in our community so that they can help us guard against it. Because frankly, that is as effective, if not more effective, than law enforcement, is having a community that is educated, active, and aware and recognizes that human trafficking is a problem and wants to stand up and stop it. So you're helping me do exactly what it is that I want to do.
Somebody listening might be aware of something that's a problem. How do they know if it's state, county, or federal that they need to go talk to?
Well, you know, the first call that they should make is to you know, you had Sheriff Milstead on earlier, Sioux Falls Police Department. Always start off with the local law enforcement. They can contact us if it appears to be a federal issue, but we work very closely, very well with them. But, you know, especially if it's an emergency, call 911. But typically folks want to start off with local law enforcement.
I always ask this of every person on our show, is there any opportunities for, are you hiring for anything locally?
Well, I appreciate that. You know, as you've been following on your show with the federal sequester, we are under a complete hiring freeze in our office that is going to last for the foreseeable future. So no hiring at all.
Do you see any cutbacks?
Yes. With the sequester, we're going to see pretty significant cutbacks, which, you know, my office can deal with. I'm less concerned with my office than I am with potential cuts affecting, you know, the FBI, affecting the U.S. Marshal's office. That's very serious and very concerning to me.
Well, Brendan Johnson, Ben Johnson, Norwegian?
Yes. Yeah. You know, it's half and half because my father is Norwegian and my mother's Irish.
Well, we have a lot of that in Sioux Falls.
Right.
But you're fifth generation.
That's right.
In South Dakota. Almost pioneer.
That's right. That's right. You know, my great-great-grandfather was a Lutheran minister in Centerville, and one of them had a hardware store. And so, yes, so five generations here, and this is home.
Well, if one of your sons wanted to be a state's attorney, what would you tell him?
You know, I'd tell him I'd encourage him to do it. You know, my dad was a state's attorney in Vermilion before he got elected to Congress. And I would encourage him, but I'd also say, look, you need to find your own path. If that's what you want to do, great, but don't feel like you need to do it because your father did it.
So you can have a good career as a federal prosecutor.
I've really enjoyed it.
Your family, your children, it sounds to me like a great life. Brendan Johnson, U.S. Attorney, want to thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much. It's been a real honor.
John Michael's firm started in 1977. celebrating now 36 years, 1,900 hours programming, making this the longest-running radio talk show in Sioux Falls radio history. Thank you for listening.